This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 340 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Welcome to episode 404 of the Outlander podcast. I'm still Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Samantha. In our next episode, we are going to be starting our read-along of book 7 of the Outlander series, An Echo in the Bone.
It's, you know, I know that that's what we're doing, but I almost feel like we shouldn't. Because the TV series hasn't caught up with us yet.
Oh, we don't have a choice about that.
We're going to be so far ahead.
It will all come out in the end. Because I'm hoping if we get a season 8 that they are not going to move 7 into 8. So we have to just trust in the process because we're not changing our process. They change theirs. We're not changing ours. So if you guys would like, first of all, we invite you to stay. If you do nothing else other than listen, we will be very happy and very thankful. But if you'd like to participate, it's kind of a fun thing to do. And it lasts like usually at least a year.
Good God.
Chapter by chapter read-alongs. Book 6, They're About the Snow and Ashes, is still to this day, May 6th, 2022, is still the longest book. However, they are all only slightly less long, only slightly shorter.
I mean, comparatively, but it's still a long book.
No, they're still silly long. Yes. So it gives us plenty of content. It'll last plenty long enough. So all that to say, we love to have our listeners join us, not just as a listener, although that's, we're totally thankful if that's what you're, what you have the bandwidth for. But we are super extra grateful for our listener, listener participants. They choose a chapter. We release a chunk of chapters and we put them on our Facebook page. And you claim a chapter you want or multiple chapters. And then we put your name down for those chapters. And we advertise a due date for, like, you know, it's usually a month or 6 weeks out. So you have plenty of time. And you just read that one chapter or chapters. And you just take some notes, make comments, whatever you would do on a close read, whatever comes to mind. And then you send those in by the due date.
And you may only have one comment on the whole chapter. And that's fine. Like, if you're like, this chapter ticked me off because he, XYZ, blah, 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 blah. Whatever.
Well, I think Diana was drinking when she wrote this chapter. Like, literally anything. That's hysterical, too.
Yeah.
So choose a chapter or chapters. Write up as much or as little as you want. Send it in by email by the due date. And we will include that when we sit down to record. And we give you full credit for your comments. We always use first name. First, full first name, and then last initial. Unless someone tells us specifically they do or don't want a certain way, then we'll honor that. So yeah, so you can find out what chapters are released and use this space, the space, also to claim some chapters. Go to outlanderpod.com/echo. Now that does, it will take you to our Facebook event where all of this is being logged. If you don't use Facebook or prefer not to use it, you can always contact us via email and tell us that you'd like to have some chapters. That will be just fine too. And you can write us, as always, hello@outlanderpod.com.
And now it's time. It's time that we discuss the ultimate episode of season 6, entitled I Am Not Alone.
So the Committee of Safety, headed by Brown, Richard Brown, has come for Claire. That's how the last episode, episode 7, left us. At the beginning of this episode, Claire sends Mrs. Bug off to get help. And I'm like, oh, I'm not sure I'd really trust her. She just basically said you weren't important. And what was more important was she said the death of Malva and its effects on anybody else or she basically indirectly belittled the death of Malva in that she said last episode, what about the scandal that will become of us? What will that do to us? Yeah. So I'm not sure. I'm not really sure, Ida. But if that's all you got, okay, fair enough. Ask her to go.
I tell you what, though, as long as her scandal's on the line, she's going to do whatever it takes to help you.
Yeah, but this is past scandal. This is life or death right now. This is not about reputation. This is if she stays there in the house, number one, if she stays in the house, she can get shot up too. But number two, so her leaving not only gives her the chance, whether she follows through or not, we'll have to see. But this gives her the chance, or Claire and Jamie the chance, to get extra help, number one. But number two, Mrs. Bug can get out of Dodge, so she can save herself. So
tell you what, though, they took their sweet ass time.
We don't know what all they did or where all they went, but they weren't that quick. It was not that quick. So it's a standoff between Brown et al. And Jamie and Claire. I love seeing our Annie Oakley Claire, and I love that they did such a good job with this scene. I bet it was heck of fun to shoot, but the only thing I thought truly laughable in this first scene is when they run back inside and they're buttoning up the house. They have to close 87 doors and windows. It's ridiculous how big that house is. It's ridiculous. It's beyond. It's beyond.
So many windows, so many doors, and so many entrances.
Exactly. That, like, so many glass entrances. Yeah. It's dangerous. So from what I can remember, this is not the size of the book. Not the size of the big house. But this all in general, like the sequence of events is pretty much straight from the books. This is, I'm calling it, and no, I'm not going to elaborate. Well, I'll say a little thing. I'm calling this the first shootout at the OK Corral. A different OK Corral. But the reason I'm saying first is because there was another one. There is another one in a later book. I'm not going to spoil anything in case you're a non-reader or you haven't read the books. And that one, even though it involves fewer people and fewer guns, is a lot hairier, in my opinion. At least I read it and got like I still get like kind of chills when I read that. It's freaky town. But so that one, if I'm not mistaken, even I think even Diana calls it tongue in cheekly, funnily later on after it occurs in a later book. I think even she calls it, or the person involved calls it, shootout at the OK Corral, something along those lines, which is why when I thought about it for this scene, I'm like, oh, that's funny, because Diana already used it, but in a later book. Yeah, what I don't remember is that so many people, again, in book six, what I don't remember is that so many dudes were shot. It was like there was one shot and then they kind of stopped. They had a full on like a back and forth for a bit.
Yeah, but they really only shot one dude, though. They still only shot one person, and it was Claire who did it inside of the house.
Oh, no, there was somebody outside shot. Claire shot the dude inside. That's from the book, too. But I thought there was also somebody shot outside, because not just the back and forth. Yeah, there was a lot of shooting back and forth. But I thought there was more than one person who went down.
Well, there's only one that was wounded enough to die.
Later on, yes.
Yes.
I think this is new. Did I see correctly? And I did not notice it the first time. I spied with my little eye, were they bringing up a small cannon?
Oh, I didn't see a cannon. Did you see that? That's hysterical, though.
I'm telling you.
I just kept seeing them rolling wagons.
Oh, no. This was not as big as a wagon, but it was a short, squat metal thing on wheels that several people were pulling up. And I was like, you're effing kidding me. Because a wagon's going to be like, you know, something people can ride in, right? This was not that big. Mm-hmm. And I saw it. And I was like, the hell? A cannon. Who has a cannon on the ridge? A cannon. I mean, it's possible that they had the cannon in the back of the wagon and then took it. I don't know. I just know. I know I'm not making up that I saw something I thought was a cannon. It is possible that I'm wrong and it's not a cannon, but I missed it the first time or didn't see it. The second time I was like, you're kidding me. That's definitely, unless I'm unless I'm blocking it, that's definitely not in the books. There was no cannon brought to the ridge. Outside of war stuff, which we haven't gotten to yet. Jamie says it's revenge on him, even though obviously the goal is Claire. It's revenge on Jamie. He says something about Marsley killing Lionel. And so my question is, I know that Marsley told Fergus before they left. Remember, Fergus kind of flipped out. But how would Brown ever find out that Marsley killed Lionel? Ever?
I mean, people talk.
I know, but who knew? But besides Jamie and Claire and Marsley and now Fergus and Lionel, but he's dead.
I don't have the answer to that. But just the idea that the news could get out if Fergus was drinking a whole lot, maybe he might have slipped it out of his mouth.
He was drinking, but he found out like just before they left the ridge. It was not a long time, and I don't think he had an opportunity. And he, like, over his dead body, would he have endangered his wife? But still, or at least purposely. Wow. So I thought I heard. I know Jamie said this is for revenge. This is why Brown is here and doing this. But I swear he said something about Marcy killing Lionel. And I was like,
he did. He did say something about that. I remember him saying it. I don't recall the words, but I do recall him bringing it up. And I was okay. I was like,
how, when did he find out? Both how and when. So that's new. And that's obviously the way Lionel died is different from the books. That's fine. But I was going to say it's new. Of course it's new because it's not in the book, but I don't even know. I think in the book, I'm pretty sure that Lionel doesn't even know. Sorry, Lionel's dead. I don't even think Richard finds out that Lionel was killed at all. He may suspect something, and that may be enough for him to want revenge. But he does not know, you know, because all he was ever told was that he died of his injuries at the attack or whatever. So who knows? I don't know. It's just wackadoodle. I definitely missed it the first time, heard it the second time. So what they say is they want to take Claire to Salisbury to have her tried in a court of law. And then, boom, we change over. We also have Roger and Bree. They are en route with Jem to Edenton. They're going to...
That was a really weird interspersing of timelines.
I'm glad you said that because you have given me a good segue. So, yes, 100%. I cheated on you a tiny bit. Well, even if I hadn't cheated on you, you didn't do the live. So it was going to happen, even if I didn't do it a little bit earlier than that. So normally what happens is Summer and I obviously record here and put the show up or schedule it to have it drop, hopefully just after the episode airs on the East Coast. And then about an hour, half an hour later or whatever, we usually have our live after show. Well, this week for numerous things happening, neither happened. We did not record on time or early. We were recording an entire week late, basically. And our live after show actually happened before we recorded. So in order for that to work, obviously, if you're going to have an after show, you got to talk about the episode. So we had, I invited two people to help co-host with me. One was not able to get to come on because of her computer or her phone or something, even though it was technical issues. The one who was able to join us was Sarah Kaizek from Outlander TV News. And she is whom I cheated on you with even before the live. I said, I think I texted her. I don't even know, before she watched it or whatever. I said something and I was like, what did you think about? Or maybe I just said, have you seen the episode? Maybe it could have been that simple. But anyway, something we both agreed on even before we did the live was it was very jarring, like you said, and it really took us out of the story. It didn't balance at all. If that was their intent, it didn't work for us. It wasn't a good juxtaposition if that was their intent. Whatever the intent was, unless their intent was to confuse us, they were unsuccessful. Several people said it. So Sarah said it. So I knew I wasn't like off my head feeling weird going back and forth to these. It was like felt out of place. And you just said it, which now solidifies everything. But Sarah said it. I said it. You said it all separately. And in our live on Wednesday, a lot of people liked it. Like they liked having it. A lot of people thought or understood that they did it to show kind of to balance out like the high level of anxiety and fear with Jamie and Claire balanced with, you know, a little more familial, safe time. But I'm like, yeah, doesn't work that way.
I think it could have worked better if they hadn't started switching between the two.
In the middle of a fight?
In the middle of the fight. So when they were all in the calm place, that would have made more sense to go back and forth between.
So like when Jamie and Claire are having their nice, nice, calm time in bed.
Or they're talking about the last meal. You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying. So not meal. In the middle of the fighting and stuff.
Yeah. Because.
Yeah. It was weird. I don't. Okay. This is what Sarah and I agreed on. Even if the content, right? Even if it wasn't like this safe romantical thing. Even if it wasn't more calming than the ridge. We both thought it was weird, regardless of content, to have Roger and Bree at all. It would have made so much more sense to, because in the last episode, I think it was in 7, you have a perfect reason for them to leave, right? He has a calling. Bree's like supportive. They're going to go to Edenton to go. They tell everybody, the writers tell us. They're telling us Roger and Bree are going to go to Edenton to go investigate this thing to make sure, you know, that to find out what he needs to do to get ordained. Great. To me, that was telling us again, I thought for episode 7. Oh, so okay, now they're gone. They're going to take off and they're gone. That is a way to safely get them off the ridge. It's a perfectly book-based storyline-wise and legitimate reason to have them gone. It's very convenient. It works. It doesn't challenge or mess up any storyline or arc, right? Now, does having them in episode 8 or ruin a storyline or arc? No. I will admit that. No, it doesn't change a storyline.
No, but they are still the big four.
When you tie them off with a bow, well, yeah, but that's not what I'm saying. I agree with you. So yeah, having them there does not cause an issue, like as far as an arc. But when you tied it up with a potential, such a nice bow at the end of 7, why you gotta do it?
Because they were like, oh crap, we forgot to do the Nevis.
But they could do that at the top. All of that stuff, that soft, easy peasy, nice stuff that's not, that's
they
that's,
didn't want to leave us wondering one more season.
That's stupid. Not a reason. I know you're just being funny now. But my point is, it didn't make sense. And it wasn't just you and me and Sarah. It was a lot of people. Now, there were also a lot of people who liked seeing it. They liked having that balance, or what they found was balance. I found it pulled me out of the story. It was jarring and an imbalance to me.
Well, and it made me very disinterested in the sexy times. Because I was like, what? I'm like, we're really going to stop for this? And what's going on?
To me, the only reason, even if part of it was, you know, juxtaposition of soft and hard or, you know, high drama with more calm
and say,
yeah. Exactly. I actually use that word. I said, if it has to do with relieving some of the tension, even I could get on board with that as a strategy or as a reason for something. I disagree that it was efficacious or successful, but I could understand if that was actually at least the intent. However, if you go beyond that, the reason I don't think, I'm not saying it wasn't a partial part of the attempt, part of the reason, the reason I think it wasn't the only reason or the sole reason or even the biggest reason is because of how much info storyline dump they dumped in there. We already had the baby, so that wasn't new. But we got the lice.
Yeah.
We got the mole, the Nevis.
Yes.
There was something else that we got that I forgot. But I mean, that it's great. It's adorable. No one hates that. We all love it. It didn't fit in episode 608 when it's all about fear for our favorite characters, whether they're the big two or the big four or whatever. So Roger and Bree are out and about en route with Jem to research for his ordination. I got to say, like I said, I think having them in the episode at all wasn't great. I love them and I love the stuff from the book, but this was not needed. The characters had just been given the perfect excuse to skedaddle from the ridge and it set them up for coming right back, even if we had the exact same scenes in season 7. We did not need them in 8. And that's valuable. And it was a lot of time. That's valuable screen time that they could have used with Jamie and Claire. So, yeah, that's what I thought. It's interesting their chat, though. They are debating another kind of info dump here, but it's definitely interesting. Well, we can talk about it. They're debating over when or if to tell Jem about his heritage as a TT. And Roger's afraid that worse comes to worse, at whatever time, obviously when he's older, that he's afraid that if they tell him, he might leave them one day. What did you think about that conversation?
I honestly did not hear the part any time that I've rewatched the show about him leaving them someday. But what I kept, okay, because I did not hear that line in any of my my watchings. But what I will say is that they are pretty much spot on with talking about how much he can know.
Oh, Jem?
Just because like you have to wait until they're a certain age because if they can't keep a secret, they're going to blab it out to somebody and then you guys are in trouble. So I thought it was a good conversation to have and I think it was an important one and I think they came to the right decision. That little boy will tell anybody anything.
Uh-huh. Well, back on the ridge, that night, their last night on the ridge, they hole up in their bedroom, just like in the books. slightly different. It doesn't really matter. In the books, they were not about to have dinner when this all happened, I don't think. But when in the books, when they were planning on, you know, preparing for at least an overnight siege, they took, like, she went down, I think later that evening, like, went down, grabbed bread, fruit, whatever she had that was available to eat, that was cooked or made. She went down and just, like, filled the water ewer and brought up food and everything. So, yeah. So they were there for at least a night or planning on a little bit of time. But they know that they can't last forever. Back to the middle of nowhere. Time for a love scene in this amazing 18th century tent.
It's got rooms.
It's something. Now, I know she did not use these words, but he says that he's a woodworker and a minister. And she says something like, wasn't, she's like, just like Jesus. I was like, no. Sex time is not the time to bring up Jesus. Because are we supposed to take this scene seriously?
I mean, what? Maybe it does something for them, man. Oh, I'm not a Catholic.
Well, neither is he. Again, it's very sweet, but it's kind of out of place. Not the love scene. Well, the love scene spectacularly, I thought. But I thought Roger B. Jem were out of place in the episode. But a love scene is... definitely out of place in the episode. She mentions the bump, like, she's like, as they're crawling around, she's like, oh, the bump.
What bump?
There was no bump. And I'm not saying she didn't have one, and she could be 4 months pregnant, we don't know, whatever, but on such a skinny girl, you know, a slender girl, woman, you'd see her at about 4 or 5 months,
and it's her second baby.
Oh, she'd pop sooner. Yeah,
yes, because your body remembers.
Well, your skin's already stretched, let's put it that way. And your muscles too. Your skin can,
it's
absolutely.
Muscle memory.
Yeah, yeah. This I would have loved. Like, literally, can you imagine season 7 opening up with this love scene? It would have been great. Lots of vroom sex.
No, that would have been a weird opening.
What, vroom sex?
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been funny.
It would be weird to start the whole season in the bedroom with him driving a car on her body.
So how about them just in their own little wagon or on their wagon popping along? Like, that would have been perfect.
They're never going to start a season without having either Jamie or Claire in the first scene.
At around this time when they're about to bump uglies, their theme, the most beautiful theme in the series, as I say every time, plays. And it's so pretty.
I didn't hear it.
I did not ask you because I know. Back on the ridge. This is when Jamie and Claire discussed their last meals. And she explains to him, oh, well, it's what a condemned prisoner or condemned person wants to have, blah, blah, blah. Now, there's nothing else. They say there's nothing else for them to do but wait. And so he leads them in an act of contrition, in reciting an act of contrition in English. And we get the story, or his rendition of the tale of the fortune teller in France, who told him he'd have 9 lives. Now, what I don't remember, I thought I listened for, but I don't remember him saying. Although, I mean, it kind of means the same thing. I'm adding a line onto this, or a sentiment onto this, because it is from the books. But this whole thing is from the books. The whole thing of the fortune teller, the 9 lives, the cat, everything. He summed this up in the books by saying that she said something like he would die 9 times before he'd lay in his grave. Something like, literally, it involved the word grave and he died 9 times, something like that. I may have some of the wording off, but it is almost identical to that. I don't remember him saying anything like this in the show. He did report about the fortune teller. It was in France. And he did say that she called him a cat. He did say that she said he had 9 lives. So that's there. We don't need that extra bit that I just said. But to me, that's because it's kind of like, if you have 9 lives, then obviously after the 9th one, you're in the grave. Like, I get it. I understand what is being left unsaid, is that you're going to die. You're dead for real after that. But I thought it was in the book, it's really effective to say you're going to die 9 times. Because having 9 lives, when you think about a cat and all that, like, that just means you're lucky. You have a lot of luck. You get out of situations. Doesn't mean you're close to death 9 times necessarily. But with Jamie, it's not a cat. Whereas you might, like, get into a stiff, weird situation and you get out of it. Like, you know, luck. No. Yes, he's lucky. But he legit is close to death 9 times, or will by the time he's dead be close to death 9 times. Anyhoozle. I thought that was very interesting. Very, very close to the books. Not identical, but very close. later. Adso is eating their leftovers.
I hate this cat at this point. Because of how they use him.
Oh, it's gratuitous, yeah.
It's like, let's remind everyone Adso's here.
That there's a cat.
There's a cat.
Now the fisher folk have come to the big house. Hiram Crombie is not Jamie and Claire's fan, but he says he would make sure that nothing unfair was done there. He says Jamie and Claire have to come out. He's like, hey, let's negotiate. And all of this takes place over some uh-oh music. So yeah, that's going to be great. So Jamie and Claire come out to the threshold and the fisher folk start throwing things at them. Claire gets involved speaking of Malva. She's like, I tried to save her. And everyone starts yelling about justice and all this. Now the committee, again, as I said, wants to take her to Salisbury, at least that's their initial desire, for trial. Now, Claire doesn't look convinced at her options no. or not happy of her options. Jamie says that Richard blames him for Lionel's death and that Claire wouldn't last a night or day with him if he let her go. Alan Christie shows up, blaming him for Malva's everything. Others are saying, no, it's the witch. Hiram says,
you know, I don't think any of these fisher folk thought this through because they're going to go, right? So because they're not going to kill them here, they're going to go and get this fair trial. And if one of them will be coming back, and that one of them is still their landlord. And I don't think they had a grasp of the long game.
I don't think critical thought is their forte.
No, but I really want to punch that fisher folk lady right in the face.
She's the worst. She's worse than Richard Brown, as far as I'm concerned. Brown knows his place, meaning he knows that he can't get away with doing anything directly. And even though we don't believe him, he's very smart. See, that's why Richard Brown was always more dangerous than Lionel. Richard Brown can think critically. Lionel took up with that ragamuffin gang of hodgepiles. Like he's redonk. He could not think critically. That's why those bad guys are bad guys. But bad guys who are smart or bad guys who can think critically, 10 times worse. So that's why, even though, does he want revenge? Absolutely. Would he like Claire and or Jamie killed? 100%. He knows he would be shot or taken to trial if he did that. So he uses his position of authority along with the actual, truly legal, correct thing to do, which is to take someone, which is not to have a lynch mob, execute vigilante justice, but to take someone into custody or arrest them and keep them safe and take them to court where they can stand trial. So he's smart. Yes, he wants them probably both dead, but he wants to do it this way because not only if she's found guilty, will Kenny say, look, I didn't do it. It was the court, right?
No, he doesn't want it on his hands.
Exactly. He doesn't want it. He wants to be part of it. He wants it done. And he will make sure it is done.
He wants to be the puppet master, but he doesn't want to be the puppet.
Yes. So Jamie says, as I said, Richard blames him for Lionel's death and that Claire wouldn't last a day or a night. Alan Christie shows up, also blaming him for Malva's everything. As I said, others are saying, no, it's the witch. And Hiram says, no, 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 they both can go because then Jamie can make sure Claire is safe and all that. Then come the people, I believe, maybe not all from Ardsmuir, but basically people on the ridge who are team Jamie. They show up. So actually, Mrs. Bug did do something good, but they can't win. There's not enough of them to stand up. And Jamie realizes this and he's like, Sassenach, we got to go. We got to go. They're going to have to go together. And he says to Mr. Crombie, if we're hurt, this will be on your head. Tom Christie shows up and says he'll answer for them, meaning he'll go to make sure nothing happens to them. And if something does, he'll take that responsibility. He's not looking too great. He's looking awfully scraggly. I mean, given his daughter and grandchild were just murdered and yeah, I doesn't surprise me. But he says he will travel with them to make sure they're safe. I got to say, at this point, the number of old, and I mean this with the best intention of my heart. I'm a white person, and I think it's okay for me to say this. The number of old, scraggly white men is just a lot. Like, it's starting to get to the point where I can't tell one away, apart from the other. Is that bad to say? Because they all look the same. They're about the same height. They have thin, wispy, white, grayish hair. It's nasty, dirty, slimy. It's this is all on purpose, right? This is all makeup and everything. Their faces are grimy. They all have like 2 or 5 day old beard stubble, and they're older. They're not, you know, 103, but they're all probably in their late 50s, early 60s, maybe late 60s. I don't know, but around the same age, and they just look kind of wizened, just old and scraggly. And with what's just happened, especially for Tom, it's expected. Like, he just lost his family, basically. So I'm not holding it against them. I'm just saying, by the time you get Mr. Bug, Richard Brown, you throw in Lionel too. Why not? He was in the last 17 episodes. And then Thomas Christie, I'm like, I can tell by their voice who they are more than their looks. Yes, they look different. No, I mean, yes, I'm being a serving of facetiousness, but I'm like, they just look so similar. When they look dirty and old and their hair's misplaced, unkempt, it's hard to tell sometimes at first glance. That's just me.
I'm just tired of the Browns. And the more he was on screen, the more I wanted to just punch him in his potato head.
Potato head.
He's got a potato face.
They are going to leave the next morning. They have one more night there. And here I thought, Tom Christie is the Christ figure. And the reason I wanted to say that is not because, haha, I can make a comparison. No, it's because I think Tom Christie has gone full circle. Or maybe not quite 180, but come full circle as in life experience. At Ardsmuir, he probably would never. I mean, now the 608, episode 608, Tom Christie would probably admit this, but the episode 601 would not. At Ardsmuir, he was full of himself, self-righteous. He wanted to lead for pride's sake because he thought he had the right information, the right side of God, the right type of Christian, all of that stuff, right? And he thought that made him a good leader, or at least the leader that should be in charge, the person who should be in charge. When he arrived on the ridge, he was all about the D measuring with Jamie. Remember? We talked about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He was very much threatened by Jamie. But given all the things that have happened, seeing how Jamie welcomed him, seeing how Claire treated his daughter, seeing how Claire treated him with his surgery, even when he was obstinate, she never failed at offering him kindness, offering him healing.
And naughty books.
Oh, well, that's just funny. Out of her sick bed, she sneaks out of her sick bed to come ask about him. Yes, it was slightly, I would say 80%, 70-80% to find out about Tom and his well-being, but also a little bit selfish, just a tiny bit, because she wants to find out how the hell are Tom and I have the same illness when we haven't seen each other for weeks, right? So she wants to get down medically, selfishly, curiosity, science-wise, she wants to know what the heck's going on, and she's going to only do that by talking to Tom. The stuff with Claire, right? So she wanted to get to the bottom of science and illness and what happened to them, but also she knew he was ill. She didn't know until, you know, she recovered mostly, and they tell her that Tom was also sick. So she wants to check in on him. So seeing how Claire is pretty darn selfless with, you know, coming to him from her sickbed, and how his feelings about or for, well, maybe we'll find out later, about or for Claire have changed or developed, whatever. He's a changed man. Tom Christie is the most changed character in season 6.
He's also broken. Like, this episode, he's broken.
Yes, he's broken, but he's not. I think you can be broken and still be able to do things for others, I guess. Because that's what he did. If he were completely broken, like unable to care for himself, not that. You know what I mean? If he were, I think there are degrees of baby brokenness. If he were, at least what I imagine, as completely broken, he would not have been able to do what he did at the in this episode. So he's definitely distraught, but the fact that he has the empathy, the guts, the emotion, whatever words you want to put in there, to do this, to help keep them safe. And he's the one, as a matter of fact, who recommends that they leave in the morning, for he wants to give Jamie and Claire one more night's rest, or a night's rest. That's why I say Tom is the Christ figure here. Now, is he putting himself at risk, like sacrificing? In a way, yes, because this could come back and bite him in the butt, whether it's something does happen to Jamie and Claire and then he's held responsible because he said that he would take their responsibility, or just him kind of speaking up in a very dangerous situation. That is dangerous for him, right? So he's a Christ-like figure, if not a Christ figure in the terms of literally giving up his life. He's acting Christ-like at the very least. So that night, there's one more night's rest. And did you notice they have Claire sitting or standing or whatever in front of their candles are melting? She takes, remember they have a few jewels, or at least one jewel in those candles?
Yeah, but didn't they already?
She takes a jewel out of the candle as it's melting and holds it, and they never mention it. They never talk about the jewel, but she takes it out of the candle. They never say what she does with it. I'm sure they hide it again, but did you miss it?
I apparently did.
Because I think I missed it the first time. I only saw that the second time. I was like, it was a good size. It was a raw one, so it wasn't shiny and sparkly. It was like covered in kind of, you know, crusty stone or whatever. The way raw gems are, you know, are found, or in the earth they're found, they don't come out pretty. They come out, you know, covered in, they're covered in messy earth. Later that night,
you didn't come out of your mama clean either.
We're not going there. Later, Claire is scared, so she wakes Jamie up to have some nookie schmookie. Now, as they embrace, of course, their love theme starts, and I thought, once more for old time's sake, is it me? Now, okay, so they make schmookie, and it's very sweet. It's very, that was beautiful. It was very artistically done. It was very emotional. It was connected. Like that, you could tell. I thought you could tell there was an intimacy coordinator, director, whatever it was. And then as they were lying down afterwards, or at the end, the camera backs up and you see a wider shot of the room. I could be wrong in what it is, but it looked, there was all kinds of shiny stuff on the floor.
I'm assuming it's glass.
But yeah, did they break it? Or did they lay glasses and bottles and whatever all over the floor, and maybe some metal? My first thought was, wow, that floor is covered, number one. The second thought was, why do they do it? Oh, maybe it's like an alarm. So if someone comes in the room, they would hear it. Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because that didn't even cross my mind.
Well, what other reason would you have a floor covered full of glass?
My assumption was that they were shooting all the windows out earlier and it was just broken glass from the earlier melee.
See, that would make too much sense. I don't know. It just shows how many different thoughts can come to many different people. Wow. See, yours is Occam's razor. What's the shortest distance? Not mine.
You took the crooked mile.
I don't know what I did. I took the other planet. I mean, I was trying to make sense of it, but apparently
I was like, I am not in your timeline. You and I are not in the same timeline.
Not at all. The next day, at least they get to travel in a covered wagon. Now that's definitely different from the books. My guess is the reason they did it was because to have her on a horse, let alone being out in the open with potential stoning, it was just too dangerous with the pregnancy. Even just being on a horse, because one fall, you know, you lose your baby. So, or hurt yourself, right?
I mean, also, this gave them the opportunity to have lots of close shots on the two of them.
Absolutely. No, I think it was a great move. It made a lot of sense. Yeah, it gave them a lot of time to have conversations, to also get a lot of up close shots.
Mm-hmm. And you can't snuggle on, if you're not riding the same horse, you can't snuggle together. You can awkwardly hold hands, but, you know, you're going to have your arm held at a weird angle because, you know, the horses can't get that close. Like, there's no comfortable way to have the scenes they shot in this episode on the back of two horses.
Later, Claire, I think they've stopped for dinner or for some break or maybe for the night. And Claire says she's tempted to help some of the men, the people there who were injured, to help tend their wounds. But she and Jamie both agree, nah, nah, it's not safe. Let's just leave it. A rider comes to them and says, comes to them from wherever, we don't know at first. But the conversation he has with Richard, I think, is that there's nowhere to take her, no court. And so Richard says, they'll have to continue to Wilmington, which means an additional 200 miles.
Oof.
I know. Can you imagine?
That's like a week. That had to be like a whole week
of travel, yeah. So back at the ridge. So once Ian's back from wherever, Lizzie notices him and she runs to him and she's all crying, Ian, oh my gosh, they've taken him. La, 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 la. So because that was the voice that I use.
Well,
That was the voice that I use when I really am curious. Like, Summer, I wonder. Da, da, da. No, I wrote this to be like, not mocking.
Facetious?
A little bit. Not really facetious, like trying to like narrate. Like, I wonder what they'll do. That kind of thing. Go after them?
Ah.
We'll see. But so I did not read my whatever. Now we all know that. So en route, just like the book, Richard Brown's men are losing patience. You can see that they're getting antsy. They had not signed up. Signed up? Oh, my Lord. They had not signed on for a month-long trip or however long it was. They were likely promised a quickie hanging and done. Now, as they ride through a village, so that, remember, because they had to keep going on to Wilmington, since Brown is having word sent ahead that he's got the witch, the people are expecting them, and they know, and they start stoning the group. Now, just like in the book, except that they're not on horseback, and Claire doesn't go after two boys on the ground, but there is a hole in the wagon. There's a hole in the wagon. Dear Liza.
Canvas?
Yes. That's what I mean. In the covering. And that little boy comes in and Claire does go after him. But
punches a dude.
That's what I'm saying. She goes after him. So she does. They gave her someone to hit. So that was awesome. I'm almost 100% that it was due to her pregnancy that they didn't have her on horseback. But it was still entertaining. Back with Roger and Bree. They're still Untervegs. They're still on their way. They're still en route. They have a copy of L'Oignon, even though she says the onion. I mean, that's the translation, but come on. You can say L'Oignon. It's Fergus's paper. And I love it. Just, this is the part of the book. I mean, these little things, like, it's definitely not an Easter egg. It's straight up. It's not, I mean, it's nice to hear, yes, but it's just great because now we're getting.
I would really like a sitcom.
Based on L'Oignon?
A 30-minute sitcom. Just Fergally and Marsley.
Fergally?
Fergally.
Fergus and Marsley. I have never heard that. I've heard of Fersali. I've never heard of Fergally.
Me either. It just happened.
Is Fergally have curlier hair than Fergus?
Probably.
Fergally.
Probably. I would watch a sitcom of them just running
the print
newspaper
shop
with all the kids running in it.
Oh,
the
my
shop.
Gosh.
Wouldn't that be hysterical?
Yes, that would be. I do think so. Yes. And then Jem talks to the baby and he's got an itchy, scratchy head. And we find out he has lice.
You know what's funny? I think it was the very beginning of this episode when they showed them kind of walking around and he was running. He says, he scratches his head and he goes, uh-oh. So, like, they foreshadowed this from the very beginning. I was like, oh, they're going to do it. And then everyone's been saying
Roger has shorter hair.
Yeah, that Richard cut his hair. So.
Well, so yeah. So he's got lice. This is kind of what I meant when I was describing the, not the imbalance, but the taking us out of the moment when we're in that tension-filled scenes with Jamie and Claire. Mm-hmm. I think letting us know about Fergus's paper is cool. It is good. Like I loved it. I love hearing about the lice. I love the stuff that we get. But everything else just seems like, including that, it just seems like they're shoving it in to get it in. Not just because they know lovers, good Lord, Fergley and lovers. Not just because they know that viewers will love it. Of course, they're going to love anything. Book readers are going to love anything you give us, okay? That's never wrong on its face. But the challenge, normally the adaptation reflects their talent and ability to pull this off. So that's why I think we're critical. It's not just, I mean, yes, we love the book, but, you know, whatever, who cares? A lot of people love the books. It's not critical just to nitpick. Again, we're not complaining. This is all great stuff from the book. Why should I open my mouth to complain when we're given so much book? Because I'm not two-dimensional. I can think critically. I can say, yes, I want all the books, but still know that just shoving it in there to say we've given you more is not a reason to have it. It's not a reason. Anyway, I love the stuff that we got. Not a problem. But it just felt like they were... The pacing was odd with, not with Jamie and Claire. Jamie and Claire's pacing was fine, but putting this intermittently was weird. It broke up the story, and not in a great way for me. So it seems out of place when we're following Jamie and Claire on their dangerous trip. Now that having been said, with Jem, I think he's adorable with short hair. He looks very cute. Brianna is getting ready to chop off Roger's hair. They have his wig down for once. And we saw him like from the side back view. Mm-hmm. Damn, Roger / Richard is looking sexy.
Jesus,
oh stop it! Because now I can't fantasize about that because it's Jesus. No, Roger with the hair, Roger with the long hair, even if it's just only like shoulder length, whatever.
I know, but he had ponytail hair.
I know, right? It looked good.
It made me laugh. Ponytail hair.
I was like, damn, they should have his hair down. Why can't they take his hair down when they're about to do the smoosh? Because that's sexy as hell. Okay.
Yeah, but then it would have been in the way.
Enough with that. I just disturbed my sister. Back with Jamie and Claire. Another night in the covered wagon. So they have two more days, we find out, till they get to Wilmington. There's like, the camera is like focused on someone's food and there's like a mouse on it. Like, that's gross. It's just gross. So all these men, so they're out there again for the night. Like basically the men have set up camp. These men are fighting and playing. And it's just, Jamie's like, okay, Claire used to hear. I'm going to go for a pish. So he leaves and he takes off and he runs into young Ian. He is obviously happy that Ian has followed. He's happy to know that someone is there to help in some way at some time. So Ian's in the know and he's following them. The next day, as they prep to leave, shenanigans ensue. Someone new has joined their group and they're off and someone falls off his horse and they say, I think it's Ezra, and he dies.
I think so.
Now, is this the one guy you're saying was
shot? This is the one she shot. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that dude died then. Richard.
Yeah, like a month later, however long they were on that trail.
Richard says, doesn't matter. Put him on the horse. We don't have time to bury him. Later, they're told to get themselves a drink. Claire, they've stopped for a break, I'm guessing, and they want to get some water or something. And so Jamie goes out and Claire is not let out. So Jamie goes alone. And of course, the inevitable happens. He's captured, held. And the rest of the team, hurry, let's go, leaves with Claire. Tom Christie follows. And talks to her at the back of the...
How pissed was he?
Oh, he was upset.
He's like, it's my word!
You don't do this to me! I am your Jesus! Tom Christie follows and promises to stay with her. And she's like, no, you go back, Tom. They will kill him. And he's like, look, woman. Everything I've seen of your husband, he can take care of himself. But he says he needs to make sure that she is safe. So on this trip,
yes,
the rest of the way until they get to where they're going, mm-hmm. I don't think we've had this much Claire VO since season one.
No, God, that was a lot.
It was a lot. Like 5 minutes or something. It was a lot. I don't hate it. It was just a lot.
Well, You know, it had to, though, because she was sitting, one, she was by, she herself, was by herself, which means she didn't have anyone
to talk to,
to give the exposition.
That sounds like a depository.
I know.
Sorry, suppository.
I'm making up words tonight. I know. They were all bad. Because usually they fit those voiceover things into the conversation. So, because there's somebody else there. So it's part of the exposition or whatever.
Yes.
However, if it's something that she really can't say to anybody else,
we have to have her.
They have the voiceover. But this one, she didn't have anybody to talk to. So it had to just be her voiceover.
So in this VO, I mean, she basically narrates their trip. She mentions that Roger and Bree, or reminds us, they're on their way to Edenton. And of course, she's worried about Jamie. Like, that's basically what it boils down to. They arrive in Wilmington. I know that's where they're headed. They never say, we're in Wilmington, but that's, I think, where they are. They drop her off with Sheriff Tolliver and the jail there. I'm only bummed. I mean, I'm not saying we won't get it in season 7, and I'm not going to give anything away, but I'm only bummed we didn't meet Mrs. Tolliver, because she was a character. So was this other person.
Mrs. Tolliver. What about the other?
I know, the girl, the woman.
Prisoners.
Well, yes. So while Brown is paying off the sheriff, Tom follows till the very end. Tom goes inside and goes to the, when he sees Richard Brown paying the sheriff, he goes over to Claire and hands her his purse and says, keep this for your upkeep, basically. Believe me.
He was giving her commissary money.
Yes. Like, believe me, I would not lie about this. I promise you, Jamie is alive. Your husband is well. He tells her to trust in God, and he says he will not leave town as long as she is there. And he asks her to trust him. Just like the big house is redonkalonk big, this jail cell is a lot more roomy than in the books. Now, it's possible that she could have a jailhouse roomie that's like asleep on a bench behind her in the dark that we can't see, of course. But we don't see anything yet. So
I just want it to be tasty.
Tasty? Tasty or tasteful?
Tasty from Orange is the New Black.
Took me a second. And then, well, we're almost done. Some beach somewhere. Jamie is tied to a post. Now, who else thought or didn't think of Stephen Bonnet at first?
Yes, I did.
That's what I thought. So did a few people on the live too. But there's taunting, there's punching, there's like whatever, there's threatening, but he's rescued by Ian and friends. I love the way that they did this. In the book, it's just Ian who rescues Jamie, I think. He helps him slip out one night. But I love this. This is one of the adaptations that is probably better than the book. I loved it. And I love that his Native American friends helped him out. And that, was it Bird That Sings in the Morning?
I do not recall his name. But it was the guy who told him in like episode 3 that he would fight with him.
Is it the guy who said he wanted guns?
It's one of the chiefs, yeah.
Okay, if it is that guy, then it's Bird. So I loved it when he said, I told you I'd fight with you, Bear Killer. I was like, no, yes. Oh my gosh. So young Ian looked hot with that bow in his hand. I'm just saying. And then what made not a lot of sense until I kind of said it out loud and I realized, oh, maybe it's this reason. So at the end of the fight, Jamie says something like, don't kill the guy because he knows where Claire is. He's the only one. And Ian's like, no, uncle.
So do I.
So do I. And he shoots him, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask this, even though I think I know the answer. What theme was playing, Summer?
I have no idea.
Okay, I'll hum it. What is that? Really?
It's so disjointed when you do it because I don't know where the phrase starts and when it stops. And I'm not hearing the right instruments.
This is vocal. This is vocal.
I know.
No, not me. The theme is vocal.
Is it the Craig and Dune music?
Yes, you got it.
Okay.
So it's the Time Traveler Dance of the Druids music. And that's only, it's not reserved for Claire, but it's only ever used with talk about the stones or danger of stones, or there's a TT in the house. There's no TT around. When I heard it, I was like, what the? And then on the live, when I mentioned this, I thought, oh, maybe it's because he's like, don't shoot him. We don't, he knows where Claire is. And Uncle's all, And Ian's all, Uncle, I know where she's at too. And he's like, okay, fine. That to me is the only thing that makes sense. Because of mention of Claire, and we know hot darn tootin', the top of seven.
We're going there.
Jamie
right
is
now.
Going to look for Claire. It has nothing to do with the it has nothing to do with the stones or time travel, but it represents Claire. That to me is the only thing that made sense. And that's the end of season six, y'all.
You know, I know that we complained about some things.
Never.
All in all, I thought it was a pretty good episode. I thought it moved well. Like, it was exciting. Obviously, the juxtaposition of the two storylines was jarring. But it was a great episode.
I thought it was a great season. And the best thing about it is that Summer never has to have an episode, a season either, with a Malva alive again. If Malva's ever in a future episode,
it's going to be flashbacks.
It's going to be a flashback. Blech. But she's dead.
She is dead. I'm just saying there's just going to be, I feel like there's going to be flashbacks, especially in a specific episode.
Excuse me. Oh, I will say, I did have one more thing to say. The ending reminds me at the end of season three. When they were on the beach of Georgia, when the helicopter or the drone or whatever did the aerial shot of them on the beach after they were shipwrecked, hit ashore, whatever, swam ashore, they weren't rowed ashore. You know what I mean? They were stranded, whatever, before they were collected. I know we don't have Jamie and Claire here and no one's stranded here, but it had the same kind of epic sense to it. It was an aerial shot.
Oh, yeah.
It was, I think, you know, people, the horses riding on a beach.
Well, it was an aerial outdoor, you know, action shot.
And put that with a TT theme. Woo! It's one of the, I mean, I think Roger and Bree is the most beautiful theme. There are, and to me, the most haunting theme is Frank's because, well, you know, I have a soft spot for that dude, especially in the show. However.
What if they use the time traveling theme? As like they're just their travel song in general. Like they're like, we're going on a journey. La da dee da 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 da. We're going to go to the store. La da dee da da. Like just the sense of travel. No?
Okay. No. Again, a very special thanks to our co-producer, Samantha. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And don't forget, we'll be back next episode with the first chapter of An Echo in the Bone of our read-along. So join us back for that. And if you'd like to continue the conversation, you can head on over to our Facebook page at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
And if you haven't joined our text community, why not? It is free, y'all. Text hello, or really anything, to 916-659-5112.
And if you're interested in some Outlander Pod branded merch, please head over to www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode, which will actually be out very soon. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @outlanderpod.